What's going on, folks? Welcome to the next episode of the Next Man Up Injury Podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Allen, and I am joined again by the talented duo of Matthew Walters and Eric Crail.
What up, what up?
If you have not listened to our first intro episode, you can check it out anywhere that you listen to podcasts, or simply go to our website, rideordynasty.com, under the podcast tab. Matthew, how are you doing today, sir?
Oh, I'm doing fine and dandy today. I'm off for the summer, so no school until August, so that is quite nice.
Going to be a warm one in Texas. Glad you don't have to work as well.
Oh, it's always warm.
Eric, how goes it?
What's going on, guys? Good to be here.
Speaking of work, I hear you have a new job coming around the corner. Are you getting started yet?
Yeah, it's actually the same company, but I'm just swapping clinics. So last week was sort of just a big transition week of passing off patients to different physical therapists and making sure that their care will be pretty seamless. But now I'll be working a lot closer to home, so that's pretty good.
Well, that's certainly a big advantage for you. I'm sure that you are a tough act to follow for those other therapists. Well, to get this thing started, we're going to kick off our season of injury reports and reviews to kind of go along with the fast approaching start of training camp. We're going to start taking a look at each division's most fantasy relevant injuries on a team by team basis. So we're going to break down injuries from last year, how they'll affect the fantasy landscape moving forward. So for our first episode, we're going to kick things off with the NFC East. For the sake of organization, we will go in order of the way the teams finished last season. So kicking it off, the NFC East champion Washington football team.
7-9.
Now the football team didn't really have any fantasy relevant injury concerns carrying over from 2020. Quarterback Kyle Allen suffered a broken leg, which pretty much ended his season. And Washington has brought in Ryan Fitzpatrick to most likely usurp him as the starter. So with Fitz taking over for him, that injury is really not going to carry over much fantasy relevance. So let's talk about some guys who may have find their way to relevance. We'll start off with Kelvin Harmon, who tore his ACL last year. At the start of the season, it seemed like he might be the third or the fourth receiver candidate for Washington. But with the addition of Curtis Samuel and Adam Humphries in free agency, and Jaimie Brown and Dax Mine in the draft, does Harmon's return really have much fantasy value, Matthew?
So going into this year, I really don't think it does. Unfortunately for him, he tore it in the preseason last year, so he missed this whole season. And maybe if he would have had that season to kind of fully, you know, be that third option and they trust him going forward. But judging kind of them taking Jaimie Brown, signing Curtis Samuel, at best, I see him being the fifth option going into this year. Now, luckily for him, with the ACL tear, he'll be probably fully good go going into training camp, going into next year. I just don't see a way for him to really be any more than the fifth option on that team in an offense.
Yeah, it's tough for a guy with no track record in the NFL to really make a breakout after missing his rookie year, but we'll see what will happen. Stranger things have happened, especially in Washington. Now to discuss quite possibly the most fantasy relevant player on that team outside of Terry McLaurin, Antonio Gibson suffered a turf toe injury in week 13. Obviously he was able to come back and finish out the season for them, but do we have any concern for future injuries with something like that, Eric?
Yeah, so Antonio Gibson is one of my favorite players on the Washington football team. And, you know, it stinks because turf toe can be a really serious ailment. But like every injury, you know, it's a spectrum. So the amount of tissue damage determines the severity of the injury. Minor turf toe injuries are comparable to like an ankle sprain for your big toe. So you can have a big serious sprain or a small minor one. And at worst, a very bad turf toe injury can result in a bone fracture and require surgery. And these are the players that we're worried about long-term. Antonio, evidently, he probably had a mild to moderate turf toe injury since it knocked him out only about 2.5 weeks. And, I mean, he was able to come back in a limited workload in the final 2 weeks of the season. So I think he'll be fine for 2021.
Well, that's certainly good news for all the Antonio Gibson truthers out there. Anybody else from the Washington football team you guys feel like we need to cover? Alrighty. Well, that's certainly good news for Washington moving on. So let's check out the second place team in the East, the New York Giants. Obviously, the face of their franchise and marquee player, Saquon Barkley, went down with a torn ACL. So he had surgery in October, and he's expected to be ready for the season, per Adam Schefter. Now, Matthew, how does this affect his immediate fantasy value for 2021?
So for 2021 as a whole, I'm not super worried. He tore his ACL earlier in the year. And interesting enough, his was actually not a non-contact injury like we normally see with ACLs. He was getting tackled and got brought down awkwardly, and that's how he tore his. So a little bit different than what we traditionally see with most ACLs. But he did it early in the year. He's, by all accounts, on the right track going forward. And there's nothing of real concern that's come out that he will not hit the ground running. The only thing I can maybe see is him just kind of being limited early in the year as they kind of work him back in, as it will be, I think I wrote down August, depending on, I don't remember exactly when his surgery was. I know it was in October, but it's going to be that 10 to 11 month mark. So they might try to just kind of work him back slowly, but he should be full go fairly soon during the year.
Well, that's great to hear for Saquon Barkley managers as well as the Giants. And it may be coach speak, but I have heard that Joe Judge mentioned and threw out there that he may be on a snap count early in the year, which admittedly may not be a bad thing to get him eased back into stuff. Now, Eric, we've talked about short-term fantasy value. How does this injury affect your outlook on him for dynasty purposes long-term?
So, as a Penn Stater, Saquon Barkley is my favorite player in the league. And I've gotten into some informal arguments with some buddies about Saquon Barkley's, longevity and whether he'll be the Saquon of old or if he's going to have trouble down the road. And what I've realized is that there's definitely two major camps in the dynasty world. There's the steadfast truthers like me who believe that Saquon will be just fine. And there's the doomsday downers who are all but certain that he'll never be the same. And in these arguments, I was kind of realizing that, I don't actually know what the data says about NFL running backs after ACL. And so I did some trolling on the internet, and some folks, they did try to answer the question, but honestly, they didn't answer the question really that well at all, where like they either treated every ACL injury the same, without considering if there was also, MCL or meniscus injuries, or they didn't bracket athletes by age, things like that, that, we know that these factors matter for athletes' recovery and athletes' longevity in the league, and they just didn't account for those. So I'm currently working on my own data with another Rider Dynasty Party member to figure out this answer once and for all. And we're only about halfway done, but what I can say for sure is that running backs who do well after ACL are generally younger, their meniscus is preserved, so we're talking meniscectomy versus repair, and they're elite prospects and athletes. So again, we're only about halfway through the project, but Saquon Barkley already hits all three of those marks, so I'm still a truther until proven otherwise.
Well, that sounds like a very educated answer, not a guess or speculation like some folks like to make. So I love to hear that about Saquon, and I hope that checking those boxes indeed does mean a long, healthy career. Moving on to the next highest profile player on the Giants, Daniel Jones. Now, last year he had high ankle sprain and hamstring injuries at different parts of the season. Now, Joe Judge has come out in the offseason and claimed that Jones's injuries were, quote, far worse than initially reported. Now, keep in mind here, the Giants' offensive line ranked dead last with a 46% pass blocking win rate. To put that into perspective, more than half the time that Daniel Jones dropped back to make a pass, his offensive line was losing on their blocks. Matthew, do you have any concerns about his health moving forward with that in mind?
Well, because of his trash O-line, well, yes. But as far as his injuries from last year, I don't really think they'll carry over. But interesting enough, his hamstring injury last year. I went back and watched the game tape on it, and most of the time when you see someone with a hamstring injury, they're kind of running full speed and then pull up, and, you know, they grab their back of the leg. He kind of finished the run, then got up, kind of felt the back of his leg a little bit, but then, you know, kind of went right back to the huddle. And it wasn't until, I think, two plays later that he threw a pass that you really saw it affect him. So, obviously, we're just going off of film, but it's a little difficult to tell exactly how bad the hamstring strain was, and also what the coach is talking about. Was it the hamstring, or was it other injuries that were probably worse? Because if it had been a grade 2 or even a grade 3 hamstring strain, I don't think he gets up initially and even gets back into the huddle to try to play through it. But it's probably going to be fully healed next year. I'm not too worried about any re-injury or anything like that.
So definitely more fear about his offensive line actually protecting him than
for sure
future injury.
For sure. Like, I mean, maybe getting wrecked by the defensive line and getting a concussion is more of a concern than any of the hamstring or ankle or anything like that. But
yeah, when you have to play against Washington's pass rush twice a year, that's not a good sign for your health, regardless of how good your offensive line truly is. Now, Eric, obviously, with him playing through injury, he's demonstrated that he's a tough player. He was under the tutelage of Eli Manning, who's noted as a tough player as well. Does his toughness and willing to play through pain help or hurt your fantasy team?
I mean, as a fantasy manager, I love his toughness. Players suffer undisclosed injuries every year. I think Matt Stafford is a good example of someone who's had 10 publicly announced injuries since 2009, and we love him for that. He plays through the pain when he can. Another good example, I think, is Justin Fields. He played through a rib injury in his final college game. And that's the attitude that we want from our fantasy players, because if you don't play, then you can't score those points. Clinically, my only comment is that he's only 24 years old. So he's a lot better off rebounding from injuries than someone like Tom Brady or probably Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, absolutely. His conditioning and age are certainly going to help him with that moving forward. My only caveat to that is sometimes we see players trying to play through injury, like we've seen in the past, like Big Ben tried to play through when he had his elbow injury a couple seasons ago, and you could tell that it was kind of hampering his ability. When it gets to that point, that's when it's frustrating as a fantasy manager, because it's like they're going to start him, so there's a possibility he could be okay and he could play well, but I've also got in the back of my mind, like, I know something's bothering him. He's not going to be at 100%. Do I risk it and go with one of my lesser options, or do I send him out there? It kind of makes it tough, but I can totally see where you're coming from, and I like to have my guys out there.
And Daniel Jones, while not really thought of as a running QB, he does get quite a few fantasy points from running, so if he gets nicked up in the lower body or anything like that, that can affect his fantasy value as well.
Absolutely. So the next player on the Giants, new to the Giants, I might add, that I wanted to discuss was Kenny Golladay. Now, I drafted him for the first time last year, and I was so excited in the preseason, and then I was just vehemently disappointed after, like, week 4. Historically, he's remained healthy and been a great contributor in fantasy. He only missed one game prior to 2020, excluding his rookie season when he wasn't a starter to begin the year. Now, does the hip injury and so much missed time make you hesitant to draft or trade for him? Or does Daniel Jones' downfield talent intrigue you enough to try to get him on your squad, Matthew?
Well, Daniel Jones has to throw the ball to someone. It's probably going to be the receiver they just signed and has proven to actually be a good receiver in the NFL. The hip injury was kind of weird, though, because I remember last year just every week I, too, had Kenny G on one of my teams. And every week I was like, oh, he's gonna play this week. It's gonna be fine. Because they never really actually said what the hip injury was. I was under the impression that it was kind of like a hip pointer he suffered. Well, it turns out it was actually a hip flexor strain, which makes sense that he struggled so much to come back then, because anytime you try to sprint with a hip flexor strain or jump or do anything athletic, there's always a chance you re-aggravate it, and there's always a chance it's going to hurt. And once it starts hurting, it's not going to stop. So that's kind of what he was dealing with, and it kind of makes sense on why it lasted throughout the whole season. I think he kept trying to push through it and kept re-aggravating it, which, like we've kind of discussed, it's great that he was trying, but may have been better had you actually just, you know, let your freaking injury heal and then get back on to the field.
Absolutely. That's actually, the way you explain that is a very good explanation of what we were kind of talking about a second ago with DJ, is that, you know, toughness can sometimes be, you know, the Achilles heel to a player, pardon the pun. It can kind of hold you back in the long run, and is frustrating, obviously, for his real life football team, but for our fantasy rosters as well. So next up, we'll talk about the third place, Dallas Cowboys. So obviously, the huge injury that everybody remembers last year was Dak Prescott's disgusting looking dislocated slash fractured ankle. I didn't see it live, but when I saw the replay, I thought his foot came off. It was awful to watch. Every time I see the highlights start to come on, I just look away. I'm like, even as an injury person, I don't want to see that. I hate it for him because I really like the player and trust the talent. Earlier this week, actually, he said himself that he feels like he could play a game right now and be very successful. So he had the initial surgery for his repair and then a second elective procedure to improve his recovery time. He's already out throwing the ball, participating in practice. He's expected to participate in OTAs. And just a brief aside, he has never missed a game or practice prior to this injury for the Cowboys. So I expect him to be ready to go. But is this something we need to worry about with his mobility or his effectiveness in evading trouble, Eric?
Yeah, that ankle injury was nasty. So the background on his injury is, you know, he suffered a compound fracture plus his ankle dislocation. And the compound fracture means that the bone was sticking out of the skin. And the ankle dislocation means that he tore some, if not all, of his deltoid ligaments, which are on the inside of the ankle. And that does sound really bad, but athletes in a lot of sports actually overcome these injuries with enough recovery time. So, you know, when he suffered this injury, when the next season starts, that matters. What's really important for performance is the type of surgery that was required. And while the official surgery procedure, you know, won't be announced, he no doubt had a metal plate put in there. And the second surgery was reportedly, I think, to strengthen that deltoid ligament further. And even though it was elective, you know, it's generally not a good sign when you need a second surgery, especially if it's to do more tightening up. So to me, that means that the ankle was a little bit less stable than they liked after the first surgery. And now that they've tightened it up, it has more artificial strengthening in there. So my concern is that the ankle might not be as mobile as it once was. He has plenty of time to work on that, but we know that it won't ever be the same joint as it was pre-injury. So my personal opinion is that he'll be just fine, but you just never know until they've actually played a game.
Yeah, I'll definitely be excited to see him back on the field and see what he can do. When I first started kind of researching what exactly the extent of the injury was, it took me back to thinking about LeSean McCoy. I don't remember if it was an E60 or a 30 for 30, but they were talking about LeSean McCoy. When he was in high school, he had a very similar injury, compound, deltoid, all that stuff, and we saw the career that he was able to put up. Obviously, they're different players, different positions, but seeing somebody with that kind of skill set with the cutting, running, jumping, known for his jukes, be able to do that after that injury gives me hope that Dak can get back to his normal self.
Yeah, I was watching this game as a Cowboys fan, so I saw it live. I will say it was very amusing when, if you watch the video, he tries to relocate his ankle. He slams his foot into the ground when he realizes his ankle is dislocated, and then realizes very quickly that was a terrible idea and starts calling for the medical staff to come take care of him.
Oh, dude.
Yeah, I cannot imagine what that would feel like, and pray to God that I never do know what that feels like. Next up for the Cowboys, fantasy relevant wise anyways, it's kind of a debate, But we're going to talk about Blake Jarwin. Now, he was talked about on the last Rider Dynasty podcast. If you have not listened to it yet, JJ, Don, and Rob did a great job talking about players who they're looking at later in their drafts, who they can trade picks for. But Blake Jarwin, he tore his ACL last year. He was one of my favorites to be a breakout tight end candidate coming into the season. And on his very first touch, tears his ACL. Heartbreaking. We all know ACL tears are roughly a year to turn around. But he's been at practice but not participating in the team drills yet, as his recovery is starting to take a little bit longer than expected. Matthew, at this point, with the way the Dallas roster is built with so many great talented receivers and solid play from Dalton Schultz last year, is he still worth rostering in Dynasty, or is it time to start thinking about cutting Blake Jarwin?
He's definitely still worth rostering. I think he steps kind of... It's hard to say if he jumps over Dalton Schultz or if they kind of do this two-man tight end approach in that neither of them really are fantasy relevant. Now, Jarwin's injury was kind of the traditional non-contact ACL pivot and then just collapse, grabs the back of the knee. It's a little disheartening that he is kind of having setbacks, but he did it week one, so he's going to be a year out right at the beginning of the year, and so he should be back. Now, it's one of those things we just won't know till we know. So you'll, if he's going to be fantasy relevant or not. Are they only throwing to Jarwin, or are they throwing to both of them, or is Schultz staying ahead of him? It's kind of impossible to tell at this point. So I would hold him at least until you kind of get some clarity a few weeks into the season. And then if it ends up he's just not being utilized at all, that's when I would cut him.
Yeah, he's somebody we might see end up on the PUP list to start the year. And if your league allows it, throw him in an IR spot. Pick up somebody else. Hold on until we see what happens with him. Now moving on to the last team in the division, the Philadelphia Eagles. Now they have a few players that we're going to talk about. We'll start it off with Miles Sanders. Now he missed four games throughout the season with a variety of knee injuries, none of which were really expanded on much, more than being listed as a quote knee injury or a lower body injury. Now, four games is not a huge chunk of the season to miss, but it does affect the value of a player. If you roster Sanders, Eric, are you trying to move him or are you holding on for now?
Yeah, I mean, as a Penn Stater, I've never really been on the Miles Sanders bandwagon to begin with. And I think that's just the Saquon Barkley effect. It's a tough act to follow. I think that his ambiguous knee and lower body injury designations are related to his low-grade hamstring strain that he suffered in the preseason. That's just my conspiracy theory. And if this is the case, though, and if it was a recurrent hamstring issue, normally I would get, my ears would perk up about this, but I'm not too concerned since he really doesn't have a history of this injury that I know of. But to answer the question, you know, if I had him, I'd probably hold just because I think he's lost a bit of value, really just not being the hot name that he once was. I think he's still good, but I'm just not certain that you could recoup the value he's actually worth to your team right now.
If he's not somebody you drafted, then you probably paid a pretty penny to get him on your squad, and it's worth holding on for now.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to point out, you made a great point there talking about the hamstring strain, how that could have potentially led to the knee injury. That's something that I feel like a lot of people outside of, you know, healthcare, sports medicine, orthopedics don't really think about when we think about players getting hurt, is that injuries don't happen in a vacuum. You have a hamstring injury, but that leads to knee instability, or you could end up having a glute strain as well later on. You never know what else might happen and springboard off of one. So that was an excellent point you brought up.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, I think it's really, really tough to treat injuries, like you said, in a vacuum, especially when they're being suffered in the preseason or worse during the season, where you just really don't have that time to recover.
Yep. And no two injuries are the same, even though, you know, we had Saquon Barkley and Blake Jarwin. There's a good example. We talked about both of them. Yeah, Barkley was a contact injury. He was kind of being dragged down from behind and just took an awkward plant and it went. Blake Jarwin just buckled and pivoted and there his went. So they're the same injury and they may have the same or similar recoveries, but one's ahead of the other and they were different mechanisms. So you never really know. Next player up, Jalen Reagor. Now, he had different kinds of injuries. He had a thumb injury once, he had a head injury, and he missed the majority of 6 games last season. Not an ideal start for a rookie first-round receiver, but he has an opportunity for improvement with a consistent starting QB instead of who knows who's starting, and a rumored move to the slot position this year. I'm excited to see what he can do. However, with suffering different injuries and a little bit of an injury history, Matthew, do we have any durability concerns this season for Reagor?
So with Reagor, let's start with the head. That happened the last week of the season. Now, it was labeled a concussion, but with it happening the last week and then not being a playoff, we really do not know what the recovery time for it was. There's some guys that get put in concussion protocol and they're back the next week. There's some guys that get put in concussion protocol and they're not back for a month. With him, we don't know. Now, every concussion is serious, but there is definitely something to be said if he would have been knocked out for a month or two from his concussion rather than back the next week. So we really don't know on that. Now, his thumb doesn't really concern me. It was surgically repaired. He came back and played fine with it. Didn't seem to have really any issues. But honestly, the injury that concerns me the most going forward actually happened in the preseason last year during practice one day where someone threw an interception and then he made a tackle, which first off is dumb. Blow the play dead. Why are we having offensive players try to make tackles on interceptions in practice? But he dislocated his shoulder and suffered a labral tear. And to the best of my knowledge, he did not have a surgery to repair that. So now he will always have an increased chance of dislocation to that shoulder again. And there's always going to be a chance that labral tear, which we talked a lot about labral tears on our first pod, but that labral tear could get worse going forward and get aggravated and aggravated and aggravated to the point of needing a surgery, or that he's just constantly dealing with shoulder pain and whatnot going forward. So that's actually what concerns me the most. Now, will it be an issue? I don't really foresee it being an issue. He was able to play this year, come back from it no problem, but there is that slight hesitation with it going forward.
Yeah, you raise an excellent point there, and I actually forgot about that injury in the preseason, so I appreciate you bringing it up. And if I recall the stat correctly off the top of my head, we did talk about it on the last pod, that even after a labral repair, there's still like I think it was 13-26% chance of re-injury to that. So without a surgical repair, I know that the risk is greater, but I don't know the exact number. So that's certainly something to watch with Reagor. Now going over to their newest wide receiver in Philly, Devonta Smith. So Twitter seems to be abuzz constantly anytime he is brought up with BMI questions. So BMI, for those that don't know, is body mass index. It's a way that with athletes, it's kind of faulty to measure physical fitness. It weighs height and weight together and comes up with this body mass index. It's a polarizing topic because Devonta Smith is tall and thin, so he has a low BMI. People argue back and forth whether he'll be able to hold up in the NFL because of this frame. So let's look at his history a little bit. Eric, can you tell us anything about his injury history?
Yeah, so Devonta has suffered 4 minor injuries since 2018 that I know of, both contact and non-contact related. These include, I think, like an isolated low-grade hamstring strain during a game, another low-grade knee strain during practice. I think there was like a bruised shoulder during a game, and he dislocated his thumb during another game. none of these are concerning on their own, but it's worth noting that I think small injuries have hampered him at the college level, and that's against smaller, less elite defenders. So I think you bring up a good point when questioning his size and how he might fare in the NFL.
All right. So I had to dig into this one because I've got some feelings about the BMI argument. And I need to give some credit to fellow injury writer and analyst, Dr. Adam Hutchinson at TheRealAdam_H on Twitter. He works with the Undroppables. And he released a fantastic article that we'll put in the link in the description of this podcast so you can see it yourself. But his research revealed that wide receivers with a higher BMI that is greater than 26 since 2018, so it's a decent sample size, actually had a correlation of a greater number of injuries with higher BMIs. Now, the exact numbers, skeletal injuries, such as bone bruises and fractures, there was 1.351 per one unit. So per one player, there was more than one. Soft tissue, it was 1.069. That's things like ligament tears, cartilage injuries, 1.069 per one unit. And concussions was 1.148 per one unit. So that points to there's actually a little bit higher injury risk for players with a BMI over 26. Now, Devonta Smith is well below that. What does that mean for him, though? It does mean that BMI does matter, but it's not as big of a contributor to injury risk as some realize. According to Adam's model and his statistics, Smith has a 4.6% chance of suffering a skeletal injury over the first three seasons of his career, and a 2.13% chance of that type of injury in his rookie season alone. So those numbers were pretty comforting for me to kind of put some statistics behind it instead of just, you know, speculating like, oh, he's skinny. The NFL players are faster and stronger. Like, yes, we know that. We acknowledge that. But the dude played in the SEC. That's not exactly, you know, powder puff football.
So just to clear up what you're talking about there, BMI greater than 26 is actually leading to slightly greater injury chance than BMI less than 26?
According to Adam's research and his statistics, which again, we'll provide a link to so everybody can see it. But yes, that is correct. There was increased occurrence of skeletal injuries, soft tissue injuries, and concussions with a BMI greater than 26 since 2018 with wide receivers.
But just slightly.
Correct. But
gotcha.
It's the opposite of what it's the opposite of the argument for Devonta.
Right. Everyone says because he's so skinny, he's going to get hurt more. You need to be freaking out and fading because he can't take a hit in the NFL and blah, 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 blah.
But we will see what he does. It will certainly be interesting to see Philadelphia with their new wide receiver next to Jalen Reagor, who was off injured last year. Hopefully one or both of them can stay healthy this year. So folks, that does it for the NFC East and this episode of The Next Man Up. Next time we'll be discussing the NFC West, what we can expect in 2021 for the Seahawks, Rams, Cardinals, and 49ers. As always, we'll close it out with our social tags. Matthew, where can we find you?
You can find me mostly on Twitter at Fantasy Ferret. That's where I like to go and talk nonsense fantasy football with everyone and just get away from normal life.
It can certainly be a good escape. And Eric, where can the listeners find you, my man?
You guys can find me on Twitter. I am the Fantasy Football Nighthawk. You can find me at FF_Nighthawk.
Cacao. I'm taking that out. I'm so sorry.
You can keep it.
Oh, gosh. And again, my name is Kyle Allen. You can find me on Twitter at KAllen_4. Don't forget to check out writerdynasty.com for the latest from our tremendous team of writers. And get us a follow on Twitter as well at @WordDynasty. And one last thing before we go. Always remember that the best ability is availability. Peace. greater occurrence of both skeletal soft issue and skeletal. I can't say that.
Skeletal.
There was